Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Open Sources Guelph. You're on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico, and joining me is...
Scotty Hertz, boots waterproof for the new season, so put two layers on this time, so...
Yeah, it was... I was on a bus tour earlier, and we got out of the bus at one point.
Sunk into the mud?
No, it was over at the old Turfgrass Institute.
Oh, yeah.
And,
soon to be condos.
I don't know if it'll be condo. It'll be some sort of Guelph Innovation District thing.
Ah.
Anyway, more on that.
More later.
More on that later. Open Sources is CFRU's Politics and Current Affairs Discussion Show. And you can find us here every Thursday at 5 p.m. as we talk about the latest news items from Guelph, Ontario, Canada, and around the world. And we even sometimes interview local newsmakers and politicians. This week, though, we're just going to be doing news, including Elizabeth May. She's announced that she's officially retired as leader of the Green Party. So what's the party's future without her? And then the Ontario line. It seems like a done deal, but there are still a lot of unanswered questions about the Ontario government's plan for Toronto Transit. And then we will talk about a couple of them. And then finally, Brexit has now become the Brexit election as the UK goes to the polls on December 12th. What can we expect after the election, and will it lead to an end to this madness? But first, Wexit. It is top of mind because there was a big meeting in Edmonton last weekend. 700 whole people showed up. To push for this Western separatist movement to become its party. The founder, Peter Downing, has said that he will be filing papers to make it an official political party in Alberta. So when the Alberta election comes around in 2023, there might be a Wexit party.
Wascally Wexit. That's all I can think of.
Wexit. Yeah, it's... I mean, what was immediately disappointing to me was that when I was watching the news Monday night, they had like an appearance or they were doing an interview with Peter Downing. Nobody kind of mentioned the fact that there is a lot of deeply concerning things about Peter Downing and his cohort who is also leading the Wexit movement, a lot of people who are supporting the Wexit movement. No questions about that, which just makes me think that, you know, we learned nothing from the whole way the People's Party was covered.
And it's unfortunate because you think, you know, the topic is Western alienation. It's nothing new. But you would think after all this time, and like you said, everything had passed, particularly with the People's Party, that they would have it together, but they don't. And they also have trouble with original thoughts. Example, Wexit. Why can't you come up with a different name for your separatist movement? Also...
Well, it's like sticking gate at the end of everything,
yeah,
right?
Which is just, yeah, that's out of hand too. But make Alberta great again. Like, really? Is this all you guys have? And the hats have to be white? Although I saw a green one. I don't really understand what that's about, but maybe they ran out of red hats. I don't know. But right now, it's all just this sort of like...
Cafe press ran out of red hats.
Things are still a bit heated, obviously, and this is a post-election thing rather than election going in to decide whether they're going to separate or not. The burning question is, are they legit or are they pure fringe? And of course, there was a meeting with 700 people, but, you know, so what, right? You can have a...
Yeah, and there's like 4.4 million people in Alberta. Yeah. It's tricky.
I mean, it is something. It's getting, we're obviously covering it too for a bit, but probably for different reasons than... somebody made the point that if climate marches across Canada and hundreds of thousands of people go out to those...
Millions.
Yeah, it gets a bit of coverage. You know, it gets something on the news. This Wexit thing is over and over again. It's always the Wexit and all this analysis coming out about it. It's like... You know, we're obviously going to talk about it, but it's like, my question would be, is it getting a bit too much coverage in the mainstream? And I think it might be.
Well, there's coverage and there's context. It's being presented as this thing that you can't ignore. It's like the next great pressing separatist issue here in Canada, even though there's like now an actual like separatist, you know, official party status in the House of Commons. You think that might be bigger news? But, you know, maybe we're just so over the Bloc Québécois as like a separatist force that speaks to that.
Yeah, but they aren't as separatist as they used to be. They still are, but
right,
they do this bit of like, well, you know, if it's good for Quebec, we'll vote for it. And if it's not, then we won't. Whereas, you know, the Wexit movement, as we saw with Reform, which was the West wants in, now this is Wexit, the West wants out. So they've gone almost more separatists than they were, but it's, you know, the kernel of this has always been there.
Well, it's not like, I don't even know what it's about, really, you know, because I mean, ostensibly, yes, but I feel like this would be over in 2 minutes if someone started like asking like practical questions, which is like, how does making Alberta a separate country lead to you having being able to send your goods to, you know, the coast, which is what the kind of this is whole thing about, like it's what the Trans Mountain's about. It's about sending oil to the coast so you can put on tankers and send it to China. Well, being Alberta being its own landlocked country doesn't solve that. So what are you even talking about? And Nick Taylor, who's the former Liberal leader of Alberta, he was interviewed. Like, he was actually like old school Alberta separation back in like the 80s, back during the Pierre Elliott Trudeau days. And it's like, it's really seems interesting that whenever it's like, whenever there's a Trudeau in charge, all of a sudden we have to separate or talk about separation. But he says like, this thing in the interview is like, this is over before it begins. Like, what's the future of a landlocked province? Like, how's that going to sell the oil and wheat? You can't, because then you have to set up a whole new economic system. You have to set up trade agreements. You have to, how are you going to, negotiating with a province and the province next door is one thing. How do you negotiate with the country next door is the other thing. And then on top of that, are these people understanding of the fact that 69, and I got these from Elections Canada, 69.2% of Albertans voted conservative in the last election. Mm-hmm. That means 31% voted for some other party.
Mm-hmm.
So what about those people? Do they like do they not represent Alberta? Is it just purely the 69% who vote conservative? And by the way, what about First Nations? What about Edmonton? What about Calgary? What about, you know, other jurisdictions? And I found this old quote that I think it was from Pierre Elliott Trudeau. It's like, if the province can decide it's going to leave the country, then how do you stop the pieces of the province from deciding that they want to have their own, you know, set up, whether that's like on their own, whether that's to remain part of Canada too. Like, once you start sort of
build a wall,
like once you start cutting
like
things
east and
up,
West Berlin, yeah, like what you can't just say, what do you do with Edmonton?
It's okay for Alberta to separate, but it's not okay for First Nations reserves in northern Alberta to say they want to stay in Canada. You know, where do you draw the line, and can you draw the line? And once you start cutting, can you stop cutting? And I think when you start asking these practical questions, the whole we're going to separate thing goes absolutely nowhere. And then it has to come back to, what is this really about? Because then you have to get into the nitty gritty of these billboards that Peter Downing sponsored that said, is Trudeau leading us to a civil war? And, mm-hmm. And has things like written on them like normalizing pedophilia and mass immigration and globalism. Globalism, of course, is a watchword for anti-Semitism.
That's
because
code.
Yeah. So what is this? Is this about economic anxiety? Is it about alienation? Is it about, or is it about, like, I'm a racist and I'm on a racist land?
Well, and you can almost, I have a respect for the economic anxiety and for the, let's say, working people or whatever out there who is, you know, obviously the pressure is on. And a lot of that is where is feeding into that, that. It's kind of weird, the whole I love oil and gas thing. This is your thing. It's fairly obvious that it's being driven by forces that aren't just people that work there. But also, I mean, interestingly, this week there's a bit of contrast have gone on in that we've had two oil companies fold,
mm-hmm.
right? One of them was Houston Oil and Gas, who have and Canada was the other one we talked about last week. Houston Oil and Gas just packed up and left. Many, many thousands of abandoned wells, empty pipelines. You know, they want pipelines. They're mostly a natural gas company. The pipelines are empty. You know, it's like, good Lord. But anyway, the analysis of it was that it didn't mention anything about Trudeau or the government or lack of pipelines. It was lower capital flow, less investor interest, and weak prices. This was in, I think it was in the National Post. And then, of course, the insert, the Financial Post, had this glowing article about how solar plants are expanding about across Alberta, and how you know, there's a lot of potential there and sunshine and happy days, right? It's like this is a growing industry. It's not massive. It's not as massive as oil, but it's like there is potential there. Some people are capitalizing on that, which is how it works. That is the system.
Right. This is
so
where,
rather than cry, you know, why not pursue something? Something like that. And people are pursuing it like that. And it's getting coverage in mainstream.
In the
like Financial Post,
yeah.
National Post. These are like, you know, as made next to the Globe and Mail, as mainstream national media that you can get. So it's like, what's your problem? Right?
Right.
There's potential there.
There's potential because they don't have a province-wide utility like Hydro One or something. So you get all these people who are coming in, and it's a bit more Wild West, you know, a bit more, shall we say, market-driven. And this is like the bizarre thing is that it's not even about the oil. And I think it's really analogous to what's going on in coal country in the United States, where people – it's not about people like really liking the digging up of coal. Like, why would you? It's dirty. It's mucky. There's a chance you'll get sick with black lung. But it's about this idea that there was once this way of life that was good and I didn't have to worry about –
And you had a boat.
Safe spaces, and I didn't have to worry about this, and I made a good salary, and, you know, women knew their place. And
sadly, that's what it becomes about, right? It becomes, it's all these other things that are nothing to do with your ability to feed your family.
It's this nostalgia-driven thing, and I remember talking last week about...
And it's white.
Yeah, well, white, like nostalgia
mostly
is white. But,
you
know, you have the Kenny government canceling... tax credits for like digital industry, canceling funding for education. It's like, well, where do you think the next generation of work? And it's just this complete lack of vision. And nobody looks, everybody's looking backwards in Alberta, but nobody looks backwards to what happened to all that money we were making in the boom times.
Mm-hmm.
What, like, why wasn't anyone putting money aside for a rainy day? Or, you know, why aren't we like collecting? Why isn't collecting a sales tax?
Exactly. People probably know this, but Alberta is like the one province that doesn't have a tax. And I read one report that said, you know, if Alberta would just sort of even at the lowest rate comparable to another province in Canada, they could pay their deficit. Like they could just take care of it.
Right.
But
then,
no, it's like, no, it's true. It's Ottawa's fault. It's Ottawa's fault that we don't charge a tax. And it's Ottawa's fault that these companies are leaving. And I've said it before. It's like it's really capitalism's fault, you know. It's not like it's not.
Right. And you can never do enough either, because there was a clip online today of like Michelle Rempel talking about Anne McClellan, like she's like, oh, she's a hack, and it's like
because she was a liberal, right? Yeah, but she's from the West.
But she's from the West, and it's like you keep saying to Trudeau, you don't understand, and you need to do outreach. And it's like, okay, I'm going to appoint this person to do some outreach. No, that person's a hack. Well, what is the solution then?
Probably the most qualified person around.
What do you want?
Yeah.
Like, is this about actually wanting to create a future for your province? Or is this about like owning the libs and dumping on Trudeau and just building a pipeline, even though like it seems like nobody wants the product? And it could be like a chicken and egg thing where nobody wants the product because there's no way to get it. But I don't know. There's no practicality to any of this. It all seems very, and I hate to say childish, but I will.
It smacks of whining.
Yeah.
And we didn't talk too much about Saskatchewan, but they've jumped on board too. Like there's this dueling, what are some of the fake names? Albertuan or whatever they've come up with, where they should just sort of merge. And because Scott Moe, we talked about Scott Moe as the premier of Saskatchewan last time, how he just sort of flipped out. It's just not fair. Nothing's fair. Nothing's, you know, that gets really, really tiring. You guys, they have to step up. Mm-hmm. You have to step up and find another direction. And, you know, it's weird. We're seeing even from Palliser in Manitoba and even Doug Ford. It's like, well, you know, we're going to try and sort of work with this guy. And I don't know if the friends out west are going, what? Like, really? You're going to try and work with him? You know, there's not much choice. So I think this will peak. You know, we've had this the post-election anger, and then it'll kind of peak, and then we'll just see these fringy things.
Will happen.
It'll all implode, right? It'll
it's just like there's like
as it has in the past.
Trudeau hasn't been doing a lot publicly lately, so there's
haven't
not
seen him. Yeah. I haven't seen him.
Well, there was a meeting with some Americans yesterday, but I mean, it
laying low until
he's kind of like slowly coming out of post-election hibernation. So like once there's kind of like news on the front page, but I think that, yeah, there, before we start talking about the great Wexit movement, we really need to contextualize it some more. And, you know, not kind of like normalize these people who are leading it either, who are just sort of basically online trolls who are being given legitimacy.
Yes. And the trolls topic for another day.
Yes, they are. There was big news out of Ottawa. A lot of people are looking at Andrew Scheer to retire. But they got Elizabeth May retiring instead. It, you know, makes sense. She's been leader of the Green Party of Canada for a dozen years. Last election, their best showing ever with 1.162 million votes for 6.2%. Pretty good, not too shabby. She's led the Green parties from no seats to three seats, over a million votes. I think there wasn't a lot of tears about her leaving.
No, and there was this stuff being floated a few days before. It was the provincial Quebec provincial, the leader of the Greens in Quebec, the province of Quebec, was sort of putting himself forward as a potential replacement. And when those things start happening, it's like, something's up. But I had a feeling something was up when around the time of Jody Wilson-Raybould leaving the Liberals. And supposedly Elizabeth May went to her at that time and said, do you want to lead the Greens? Hmm. So if the leader of the party is saying, hey, so-and-so, do you want to take this over? That's sort of your roundabout way of saying that your time might be up, even though we knew there was an election coming and it was everybody was good to go. But and of course they asked. It seems Mike Schreiner is staying put because, of course, that was one of the first people that was the default. Well, who should lead the Greens? And so he's. It sounds like we're keeping Mike, and he'll be back on the show in no time. But so he's out. But this is the great
guessing.
He was
on the Politicast last week.
Oh, there you go. So he's still around. So this the great guessing game is going to be who's next, right? So it's kind of like I was sort of joking, like, well, is it going to be her daughter? So we can get, like, you know, Kiefer with the NDP, Kiefer Sutherland running because of the family pedigree, Ben Mulroney running, and maybe we can get Elizabeth May's daughter to lead the Greens, and they can just be this sort of like the Descendants showdown.
The Descendants,
right?
Yeah, like
Descendants
the Disney
will
show.
Battle it out.
Yeah, I kind of like that. I would love to see Kiefer Sutherland, but only if he was like playing leader of the NDP, like he was Jack Bauer, leader of the NDP.
That's two references to 24 on
I know,
this show.
I
eh?
Know. It's like
got to get back to the Simpsons. No,
tell me about the garbage tax. that'd be kind of great, actually.
Maybe Greta will come and run the Greens.
I mean, it'll be difficult for the Greens because the party's identity has been more about Elizabeth May, and whether that was sort of like intentional or unintentional. I mean, there was a lot of high fives about when she won her seat in Standish Gulf Islands in 2011, but that was a big sort of sacrifice on the part of the Greens, where they did to like something like 300,000 votes that election. And granted, that was like an out of the ordinary. I think voter turnout was really low that year. It was the year that Stephen Harper won the majority. It was the year of robocalls. Or there was like a whole lot of crap going on.
And Guelph was the election that never ended, right? Wasn't that?
That was 08.
08, sorry.
But yeah, because like that was her first big election as leader, and there was this big jump from like 600 million votes to about 900 million votes, but then it goes down in 2011 and 2015 to 300,000. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that was because of the political capital, like trying to get her a seat. That was kind of the like getting her into debates. It was kind of about her. And so by the time we get to 2019, where we kind of have like the Green movement booming, where a lot of people are looking at the Green. Remember, the Greens started out before the election, like around 11%. And of course, like the NDP was hurting, and you know, a lot of people are talking about, you know, that and like the problems with the NDP campaign. But I think going into 2019, and maybe this is part of the reason why she goes to Wilson-Raybould, is like I think part of the reason is her. She's been in business for a dozen years, But those haven't been a solid dozen years of like nonstop accomplishments and no demerits. And like you get things like there are comments about Wi-Fi causing cancer, and you get the stuff about 9/11's an inside job, and you get
the famous petition, yeah.
Yeah, and you get things like in the last election, like, oh, well, yeah, we'll have an open vote about abortion. We'll have mixed messages about, you know, Alberta Oil, and we hire Warren Kinsella, the Prince of Darkness, which is very against green brand.
Oh, and going to bat for Gomeshi, she did
going
that
to, yeah, that, yeah was, that was another yeah. one. She yeah. went to bat for Gomeshi.
Not to focus on Elizabeth May's negative things, but we're just saying that, you know, there's she was a steady presence, and I would say a loyal presence, but she didn't really hit it out of the park. She didn't really get to that, to the level of, let's say, like a Jagmeet Singh who caught fire.
Or
during
Jack
that,
Layton.
Or Jack Layton, even, who also caught fire during the, well, not literally, but you know what I mean. There was a spark there where people sort of went, yeah, that person, right? And Paul Wells was doing some speculative stuff in Maclean's, saying that, you know, if... had the Greens had somebody who was, how did he put it? Somebody who was a bit more adaptable, very savvy with the new media. I guess he was alluding to Singh. And if the Greens had sort of kicked it up in terms of, he said, nationally known spokespeople. And I guess he means beyond David Suzuki. Well, you know, most of the parties have people that they will pull and count on to go do media. Conservatives, an example, is like Peter McKay will show up, or John Baird will show up. And people recognize them and then know their opinion and whatnot. It sounds like the Greens, well, they didn't really do that.
But that sort of speaks
to their grassroots approach. They are, for being a national party, they are still in some ways very local in the way that they behave, and that they have a great respect for local riding associations and the decisions they make and the candidates they put forward, rather than installing so-and-so because they have the best bet of winning. You know what I mean? Like they work more in terms of a grassroots party works at a grassroots level. Now, whether that hindered them a bit.
There were great gains, like people like Mike Maurice up in Kitchener and it's like Steve Dick here.
Yeah.
There is sort of an idea that, you know, it also depends on the local candidate too. You can even make an argument for Mike Schreiner because of just of his style and his way of campaigning, being of like sort of a very personable kind of politician.
Mm-hmm.
Put somebody else who may be a little bit more brittle in that same spot, and maybe they don't win the last election in Ontario. So, I mean, there is a sort of personality factor too. But of course,
And there's the cash factor too. The smaller parties are cash starved these days, particularly NDP and the Greens.
Well, that was something
because they don't have the machinery, right?
Well, that was something Elizabeth May was good at, was kind of like you being able to like use the resources she had. Like she did every kind of media you could think of, like, in terms of the appearance. I mean, that's
she's out there.
She's out there for sure. Like people, she made waves in Parliament, in much, you know, Mike Schreiner's kind of copying her playbook too, like trying to be at every committee and like part of every debate.
He did call her the mentor and inspiration, right?
Sure. So, yeah. I mean, what's he going to say? Good. Thank God she's gone.
Well,
couldn't stand answering
her anymore.
It sounds
like the guy from Quebec, Alex Tyrell, sort of like, you know, well, I think I could do it.
I mean, I've seen him talk, and he's almost like borderline neckbeard type. So he has an actual beard too, which doesn't help.
I heard some referred to as an eco-socialist. I don't know how socialist they are, but it's Quebec. They do everything differently, right?
So everything,
yeah, every single thing.
But
you
I
think
mean,
it's going to be this. You're getting that.
It's yeah. It'll be interesting to see, like, because one of the things about Elizabeth May is like she's a woman. She was the woman on stage with in this last election, five dudes. So
sounds like a movie, like a B movie. One woman, five dudes. Mayhem ensues, but there'll be some hilarity at the same time. Yeah.
Well, it's
and the dudes that don't count, like Bernier, like whatever.
Well, Bernier's not going to be back.
No.
Unless
how he even got into the debate? Oh, well, let's not sidetrack.
But
it's so easy, though. Yes.
Like that's going to be a consideration. Is like, do we replace a woman with a, like, no matter how grassroots or maybe the party is, or how grassroots the candidate is, if it's a white male, does that look bad? And is that going to be part of the political calculation in finding a new leader? The interim leader, Joanne Roberts, is a woman.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I think it's on their minds.
Well, yeah, of course. And I was wondering if Elizabeth May does make speaker for this parliament, which sounds like it's not going to last very long by all accounts. The speculation is like, you know, it's
well, she said she's not going to be speaker.
Oh, okay. Sorry, she's I missed that. Run. Because yeah. It would have. Have they had a no. female speaker?
I don't know if they've had a female speaker, but I thought you were going to have.
Technically, yeah.
They haven't chosen the speaker.
Technically,
for
the Queen's still in charge, so they've got that covered. but yes, will we see more of the Queen of Green? I'm sure we will.
Well, she's not going anywhere. She's just not leader
anymore.
She's
still elected MP, but she says she's going to.
She'll still be the.
She's going to stick around and. Probably do that mentoring that needs to happen, but they do sort of have a bit more of a. It's a way across Canada presence now with New Brunswick in the fold. So
yeah,
so the Greens these days are definitely a stay tuned party,
and they're having their AGM or their leadership convention in Charlottetown.
I was going to say, are you going? But probably not. Eh?
Yeah. Well, who knows? It's next October.
October in Charlottetown sounds pretty nice.
They have established a beachhead because now Peter Bevin Baker, as the leader of the official opposition in PEI, is now the premier in waiting. So
yeah.
We'll be right back with more news. You're listening to CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus, and Community Radio.
Wasn't that lovely? That was Amanda Rem from her new CD, The Skin I'm In. She's playing the River Run Center November 28th. I'm sure there's still tickets available for the show. It's a couple weeks away, so go check out Amanda Rem at the River Run on the 28th.
Also, if there's something you maybe don't want to check out yet, it's the expansion of the Toronto subway lines. Although there is a plan in place to get four new projects built and completed by 2031. That's because the Toronto City Council has approved the Government of Ontario's plan to spend $28.5 billion on four new subway expansion projects. These are also LRT as well. So it's the Eglinton West Crosstown Extension, the Yonge North Subway Extension, the three-stop-ish Scarborough Subway Extension, and the much-maligned Ontario Line.
Yes, from Ontario Place to the Ontario Science Centre. All things named Ontario must belong to the Ontario Line. There's got to be something else in between.
It sounds like something that came out of a late night
subways,
pitch mission.
Subways. Yeah,
it's like, subways. I've got it. The Ontario Line, and it'll go from Ontario Place, even though that might not be what it's called in the future, to the Ontario Science Center.
The former Ontario Place, yeah.
Yeah, so it's... it's been pretty well established that this is... You know, maybe not the plan. What I think we found interesting about this, though, is the question of, is John Tory and Toronto City Council going along with this because, A, they're not going to get a better deal and they do desperately need subway expansion in Toronto, or B, they're taking the path of least resistance because there may be a good chance that in 2.5 years, Doug Ford is gone and then we can get back to something more sensible.
Yeah, I think it's a bit of both. But it could be if the wheels are turning on this, they're probably going to roll with it. And then should there be a change, they'll probably be able to tweak it. Now, I'd found out that they, and you probably knew this, that they'd already spent $200 million on studies to do this. So they've already dumped $200 million in. Nothing has happened. They're just looking at where things should go.
Not necessarily these, like, not necessarily Ontario Line.
No, the old plan. Like the, right. So I'm calling it the old plan, but the Toronto Transit and the Toronto City of Toronto's plan.
Yeah.
They've already dumped that much in doing the exploratory stuff, which would be...
Well, know, Transit City, which was the plan that Rob Ford dumped, was like shovel ready.
And I'm not... This amount, I think, probably includes that. Over an arc of years, they've managed to dump that much in. Now, the difference I get, in getting this plan is that this one is going to be obviously more money. I think it's going to be $11 billion more than the Toronto plan would have, the city council plan would have cost. Mm-hmm. Longer and different routes. And I mean, the timeline that they're putting on it, it seems like it's far away. It's pretty close. But if it's anything like the timeline that they put on Union Station, which is still under, supposedly that's going to be finished in 2020, but that was a long, anything that involves transit in a major center that's disrupting existing infrastructure will take longer and will cost more money because that's just the universe we live in. It was different in the 50s when they dug up Yonge Street.
That when
couldn't do it now.
When I was at Union Station a couple of months ago, I couldn't recognize the place. It looked great.
Yes.
It looked pretty good. The New York Concourse. But having said that,
you get a sandwich.
It was it was in pieces for the better part of 10 years.
It's getting there. But of course, with a building like that, as soon as you rip something down, it's like, oh my God, there's asbestos or whatever. And it just adds to time.
But, speaking of unanswered questions, I think that there are still a lot of unanswered questions about the Ontario line. And I read a fairly thorough article about what some of those were. It's things like, is the Ontario line going to go over or below the Don River? And that's one end. At the other end, when you get sort of down to Queen Street area, Queen and King, like those old parts of Queen Street and King Street, just like to the west of University, you're talking about 150 years of sewage, like pipes on top of pipes, just like completely knotted up.
Yeah.
I think Adam Vaughn said there are even places where there are still like sort of wood drainage under there, or it's like really old.
Yeah. It's probably just for like rainwater, but yeah.
Yeah. So like you're going to have to cut, like how do you get through that? And how do you undo that? And on top
of
all this,
it's a lot of money
like,
and time.
We're talking about like Doug Ford's talking about like we're ready to get going on this.
It's just
going to
happen. Yeah.
But they have to do there's EAs, there's assessments, there's studies.
Yeah.
And like if you think you're going to be riding the Ontario line in 2027, good luck, because we've been running two, GO trains for almost 10 years now from Kitchener to Toronto, still waiting for that two-way all day. And I read something in one of the things I read that, somebody made the point that the history of Toronto Transit, the long set history is that you have a lot of really big flashy announcements and then nothing.
Yeah.
Happens with them.
Like all those high-speed rail things. Oh, high-speed rail, and then...
Right.
High-speed rail, and then it doesn't happen. Or the train to Peterborough, and then nothing happens. But that's another story. But yeah, and I've often wondered, and I guess they probably still want... that abandoned, the roughed in... This was them thinking ahead back in the day when they roughed in the subway stop at Queen.
Yeah.
Which is in any movie with a subway that's filmed in Toronto.
On Lower Bay, too.
And Lower Bay as well, which the ghost stations... Which are pretty cool, but they might not be able to work those in. But yeah, what you were saying about above ground, I think that original, the Toronto's transit plan was to use existing rail and then coordinate with GO and the other partners. I guess it would include Freight, whoever that is, CN CN mostly. But then it sounds like they're going to do some like doubling of the tracks, and I think that's bothersome to a lot of people. Leslieville keeps coming up. It sounds like a lot of the resistance to the above ground line has come from Leslieville because they're afraid that, you're going to go to the park or you're going to go walk your dog or along the street or whatever, and it's just going to be continuous trains.
Yeah.
Which may or may not be the case. I don't know. But, maybe some of that money is to go for barriers, which seems to work in places. So it's still a lot up in the air, but they did get a lot of feedback on that. But, yeah, I mean, Toronto, they do need it. I mean, what do they say? That Toronto's going to grow by another... It's like another million people in the next 10 years. They're not all going to have cars, right? They do, we have a problem. Or Toronto has a problem, at least. It's not as if they don't have a problem with cars already. Have you been there lately in a car? Oh, my God.
Well, the problem is twofold. People go there expecting transit to be able to keep pace. Transit doesn't keep pace. And then the And then people go out and get their own car, or, you know, keep their own car because, you know, otherwise I can't get around because transit is too long, too cumbersome, doesn't go to where I need to go. And then in the meantime, we keep going backwards on these projects where we have one project that gets ready to go, and then somebody new comes along, tosses out, and comes back, and then we're back to square one. And actually, we're not even back to square one. You're now behind a step because development has moved forward, things have moved forward, and we're seeing this in town too, where we're seeing all these condo projects and apartment towers being built, and they're saying, like, this is going to be great. This is along a major corridor. We're building density, and people will be able to take transit.
Yeah.
And then it's like, you can't even add a – this gets into a little bit of the weeds from council this week. But, you know, you have members of city council debating about, you know, rejiggering one bus route to cover the Hanlon Creek Business Park instead of introducing a whole new bus to go to the Hanlon Creek Business Park, mm-hmm. which is something you would think we would have sorted out 10 years ago when we started building the Hanlon Creek Business Park. But
yeah. So the scale's a bit different, but the problems and the challenges are the same in that
yeah.
you've got it's all about scale, right? And if you're going to put those kinds of developments in, you obviously well, at least we both believe that you obviously need transit. There's people that would argue, just put a parking lot in there. Or it's okay, Uber will take care of it or something. But yeah. you can't just say these things. Like you need, you know, infrastructure-wise, transit, very, very important and can't be underestimated. So, yes, Toronto have taken the deal with the province. This is an example of the not the regime change, but the new Tories at Queen's Park, making nice with Toronto, who they've been beating on and cutting yeah. seats, and we hate you. But I guess this is part of the post-Dean French era as well, where the animosity is gone. I was watching a bit of Queen's Park, and there was discussions, and there was no standing O's. I think I may have mentioned this last week,
yeah.
but I'm like, was it the transit deal? I can't remember what I was watching, but it was like there was none of that stuff. Tone has changed. Let's be friends.
Yeah, it may be that getting rid of French has created less friction. It could be.
This is hard to believe somebody unelected could have so much pull on the scene, right?
It's a bit bizarre.
Yeah, it is bizarre, but that era is over now, as we've seen. So we're going to see a kinder, gentler Queen's Park, maybe a little bit.
It remains to be seen, though, because
their principles haven't changed, though, so I think that might be
what boggles my mind is that it just seems like whatever the whimsies are of the Ford brothers, and it goes back to Rob Ford. Rob Ford came out like, we're going to get rid of this LRT that's going to serve 8 subways and
Communist.
Be built for yeah. 1/10 of the price of a 3-stop subway, and then build this subway because, hey, I'm awesome. And then you have Kathleen Wynne come out and said, yeah, we'll fund that. And it seems like that's what's going to happen too with the federal
yeah.
Even though I was at a transit debate in Toronto and Adam Vaughan went on like a 5-minute rant about how Doug Ford had his head up his ass about the Ontario line.
He did not use
that's
those
not a verbatim
words,
quote.
Okay, good.
But you can read some of it on Guelph Politico. It was like if he had 3 beers before he went to that debate, that's what he would have said. But it's
sorry, I'm laughing, but it's I can
we have the federal liberals
this.
Who are likely to, you know, rubber stamp this too and give and, you know, sign the check over and it's like, why? You have
yeah.
them instead of going through with evidence-based planning that has been on the books for years and has been invested in all these planning and all these other things, like it's hard enough to get anything built now that, you know, to come to the end of a plan, getting ready to put shovels in the ground and then to throw all the plans away and then to come up with something new on the fly and
yeah.
then say, yeah, we'll rubber stamp it because, you know, what else is going to happen otherwise? That's not good. That's not sane planning. It's
because it is one of those things, with, yeah. especially with this, the time to do it was yesterday.
Yeah.
Right. It's like, when was the best time
it's
to plant a tree
like
was 10 years,
years
ago.
Behind. And I feel yeah. like at the end of this, we're going to be 40 years behind.
Because when I see the little Scarborough line there, the old LRT, which I went on when it opened just to see what it was like. And it seems so futuristic. the monorail like thing. It seems like a little toy train now. Eh?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, like they took that thing from the zoo and they just stuck it there and said, yeah, this will do.
It was like something they built for the World's Fair in
yeah.
1972.
Mono means and, one. Right? It's like,
and,
oh.
Yeah. And then they just left it up for kicks. And now it's like, why do we still have this? But yeah.
Little toy.
Speaking of why do we still have this, Brexit has resulted in finally Britain going to the polls or the UK going to the polls.
Yes, thank you for correcting that.
the last deal that Boris Johnson was able to get, I'm not sure how this was different from the backstop, but I guess it was just different enough that Boris was willing to sign off on it. Because I actually looked this up as like, what was this deal he got? Because it seemed like I got a new deal and then we're into an election.
Meet the new deal, same as the old deal, right?
Well, yeah, it was just basically, yeah. There wouldn't be a border between the Irelands, but there would be a border between North Ireland and the rest of the UK. So that's like the long and the short of it. Otherwise, everything stays the same in terms of the old deal. This was the big breakthrough they were waiting for.
Yeah.
And the DUP said no dice. And most of the rest of Parliament said no dice, which is why we're now going to be having an election on December 12th.
Yeah. Was it something where products would go from Britain, the mainland, to Northern Ireland, and they would be treated as European products? It was, again, really confusing. I'm sure there's like a 300-page report somewhere. But yeah, finally, and I'm so glad that it happened. This is going to election because it's essentially a referendum on the Brexit. No one is calling it that, but it's all they talk about. It's all they're going to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
There's plenty of other issues. And I think, in fact, that these, when we're talking about elections in the UK, that this, the Brexit is the top issue, but it wasn't necessarily, you know, all of those other questions like crime, immigration, the economy, supposedly were all higher initially on the on the radar of people rather than Brexit itself. What I also found strange was that when you break it down, the polls that I've seen, the Conservatives are currently ahead.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's not a massive ahead. It's at 32%, and then everything else is divided between all of the other parties. And it's going to be interesting to see where that goes. Like, is it just going to be a Conservative government again? Of course, in the UK, they do things a little bit differently. I'm not sure if you heard about this, that there was a pact either today or yesterday, Unite to Remain. So they've got this interesting, they call it tactical voting in the UK. We call it strategic voting. Oh, such a dirty word.
Tactical voting.
Tactical voting sounds like almost like a military operation. So it's between, who is it between again? The Lib Dems, the Greens, and Plaid Cymru, who are the Welsh. That's the Welsh Bloc Québécois.
More or less accurate.
More or less. So there's a pact between them in 60 different seats in England and Wales, which were the two countries that voted specifically for Brexit, not overwhelmingly, but enough.
Yeah.
They're going to run in seats where they don't want to split the vote between the three of them. They want the majority of votes, hopefully, to go to the Remain candidate, whatever one of those three parties. Very interesting to me, because that's right now it's the DUP, what is it, 11 or 12 seats?
Yeah,
we're propping 11. Up the Conservatives. Should they win all 60 of these seats, it changes the game once again, right?
Well, like, the game changes.
Other block that are Remain. Right. So we're seeing the divisions. It's not necessarily Conservative or Labour or whatever. It's like Remain or leave, or Brexit, right? Those are the choices.
The game changes regardless, because even if the Conservatives, yeah, are out front, but you know, 32 isn't a majority. And there's pretty much no one who's going to team up with them.
Even the DUP have had it.
Yeah. Well, the DUP hated the deal. They didn't vote for the deal that Boris thought was the greatest thing since sliced bread. Not a good start, Boris.
It's pretty accurate.
I can't not unhear that.
No.
But
order.
John
Bercow's gone.
He will be missed.
Yeah.
Not that he's dead, but he's alive. But he won't be speaker anymore.
But I didn't know he was a Conservative after all that.
Yeah.
I thought the way that's not no, he's Conservative.
I think he was more sensible, but that's
a red Tory, I would call him for sure.
Well, in Canadian terms. But yeah, like there's no one they can team up with. So what's going to happen after the election if Boris doesn't have the political strength to do anything? Because it's going to go back to first places where we're going to have no deal. We're counting down to no Brexit again. The deadline date has been moved to January 31st. And I saw a joke on Twitter somebody made after they postponed the the deadline again about, like, it's the year 2199 and the British representative goes to the EU to ask for a 3-month extension. No one can remember why.
It just keeps happening.
Right. It seems like this is the new move. And in the meantime, there's no stability at all. Nobody can move on with anything because nobody knows what's going to happen 3 months hence. The big problem, and I hate to say it's a problem, but it does look like it's Corbyn. And Corbyn, like, trying to ride this fence because, I mean, he has been a Eurosceptic for a long time.
Yeah. Can't undo that. Yeah.
Labour is the heir apparent. It's the government in waiting. But what's he doing? He's trying to have it both sides. He's like, you know what? People have said they wanted Brexit, and we're going to try and do that, and we're going to get a deal, and then we're going to go to a referendum. It's like, at what point do we realize...
Yeah. But also, while
none of this is working. Yeah.
While secretly hoping that this does become kind of referendum too. And I think he specifically said that too, that there will be another referendum.
Like, say what you want about Jo Swinson and the coalition she's building. They are firmly in the, this is stupid, let's put a stop to this. But unfortunately, the two people who are most likely to lead the country are both trying, like, one of them is just a dingbat who thinks that, you know, Brexit is the greatest thing since whatever, and the other one has been skeptical of it and is trying to at least ride the politics just far enough that he doesn't have to come out as, you know, even if it just means, like, for the sake of ending all this, because it's almost like more or less split down the middle of the country who wants to stay and who wants to leave.
Yeah.
Just for the benefit of the country, just to say, I'm going to end this madness until we can agree on how we're going to do this. I am going to put the pin back in the grenade and put the grenade back in the armory until we know how to use these weapons safely.
Uh-huh.
But he can't do that because he's built an entire lifetime of being the Doubting Thomas on this.
Yes.
And so what is a voter supposed to do? And I mean, and it's at that point. Not to prevent you from speaking, but I just want to finish. Like, it's at that point the government member is supposed to, the government leader is supposed to come in and say, like, I know this is going to be popular with no one, but in the name of ending this madness, and even if it results in me sort of ending my leadership and my political ambitions, I'm putting a stop to this. And that's what Theresa May should have done. It's what David Cameron should have done. It's what Jeremy Corbyn should do. It's what anyone with a lick of sense should do.
I'm sitting here nodding. No one can see that. But I'm like, yeah, just keep talking because that is all true for sure. He's left me speechless. Now that never happens. Well, speaking of John Bercow, he came out this week. He said this, you know, Brexit is the biggest foreign policy mistake since World War II. And like I said, he's a conservative. So people are feeling different ways about this, and no one has whipped on it. People have gone all sorts of ways. There was the party that had split off. There's conservatives that have gone independent that have come back. There's people in Labour that have left.
Yeah.
Like, those chairs are being shuffled as well as the election, which I guess it officially kicked off today, right? Like, the official kickoff for the following month is today, so... But I was otherwise engaged today, or I would have been watching very closely. No, but and you were saying that how Johnson doesn't really have any friends. He sort of does have a friend in Nigel Farage, although they said there isn't going to be any allegiance, I guess, between the Brexit Party. Geez, I wonder what they're for.
Well, he hates the deal too.
Yeah, Farage isn't actually running for a seat with the Brexit Party, but it sounds like they're going to run in every riding. Now, will they suck votes away from Conservatives? Maybe not necessarily, but. That is going to be a factor as well. But he can be really weird about, oh, I'm not going to, you know, I'm out. I'm, remember, it was, he left the European, I'm done with politics. And that's, no, he's, you're never done, dude. You're never done. But it depends who's backing him. And he has that radio show, not like our radio show. And Trump was on it. Eh? It was like, Trump's like, Germany's, there's some concern in conservative circles is there's too much like from Trump about Boris Johnson, then Boris Johnson's, you know, star might start to fade a bit. I think that's entirely possible. As you know, the more that Trump chimes in, the lower the Borisometer will go down.
Everybody in England hates Trump more than they hate anyone else.
But they also hate, you know, Americans telling them us. Well, I said us is true. Us what to do.
But yeah, at the same time, but Trump isn't backing, you know, Corbyn or Swinson or anybody.
No.
It's
that guy's Karl Marx incarnate. No,
you know, his friends are Farage and Boris, and but you know, it goes back.
It goes back to
like the nation is split down the middle. You know, and who's Nigel Farage going to hurt more? He's not going to take anything away from Remain people. The Remain might be sort of evenly split, like maybe Labour in some places, you know, Liberal Democrat or Green Party in other places. But when the electorate is split, the number of parties sort of has a direct impact on like who can be a spoiler. Is there enough votes for any one side on the Remain camp that that party might be able to pluck a seat from a conservative because a Brexit party candidate has sucked away enough support? And that's when you maybe start seeing the makeup of the parliament really change.
Yeah, and you mentioned split because there's still the strong possibility of a Scottish split, Scotland going back to being a country after 300 plus years. And I've also heard the possibilities with Wales and even Ireland to a degree. There's only 1.5, 1.6 million in Northern Ireland. Like it is still entirely possible that that is also going to be a factor. I wouldn't say Scotland's a certainty, but if my money was on any of those three countries mentioned or places mentioned, Scotland is definitely up there. And it'll be really interesting to be covering the Scottish Indie Ref 2, which I think I'll put £10 on it right now to anybody that wants to bet me. But sorry, we'll make it a friendly bet because I'm really probably not supposed to take wagers over the air.
No.
And on that note.
On that note, we will wrap up this week's show. You can stay connected to us at our website, opensourcesguelph.com. We're on Facebook at Open Sources Newswire or on Twitter at @OS_Guelph. You can listen to the show again by downloading it from the website every Monday or at the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean or on your favorite podcast app, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. I am on Twitter at Adam A. Donaldson, or you can go to GuelphPolitico.ca.
Scotty Hertz on Facebook, Scotty Hertz on Twitter, and I blog at spannerbook.wordpress.com.
And stay tuned for DJ Sands Good to Me here at the top of the hour on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. We'll be back next Thursday at 5 p.m. for more Open Sources, and we'll see you then. Thank you.